Welcome, everyone. Today we have with us Luhan Matus. Luhan Matus is a master intuitive empath who leads individuals into direct experiences of universal interconnectedness, making concepts like quantum entanglement a tangible experience. His teachings help people break through social conditioning, empowering them to recognize what truly matters on a deeper level. With a lifetime devoted to advanced physical, spiritual, and interpersonal disciplines, Luhan embodies profound wisdom while remaining dedicated to fostering growth in others. His movement system, Lobon Pai, swiftly transforms personal and group consciousness, restoring one's innate power, awakening deeper self-awareness, and attuning them to empathic communion, living with heart. Luhan is the author of 8 books, including his most recent, The Power of Emptiness. Luhan offers private sessions and group workshops in Thailand as well as online. Oh, Luhan, I am so honored to have the privilege of interviewing you on this Pure Power podcast. Your books and teachings have put critically important pieces of the puzzle of our existence together for me, and I know they've also sown the seeds for continued growth, my own awareness. You're truly a master shaman. And I'm thrilled that this audience will be able to hear from you directly now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Natalia. You're beautiful.
Thank you. So are you. I've spent the last month or so consuming your books, Whispers of the Dragon, The Power of Emptiness, Who Am I? And I am so filled with questions for you. And I'm so excited about how you've reframed existence for me. And let's just maybe start with a few basics. I would love for you to tell us a little bit how you came to all of this. And then maybe I should hold back digging into the questions until you've given us a little bit of that background, because I think that's probably really important. So,
Well,
yes.
oh gosh, it basically started when I was 6 years old. So basically, really, what you're looking at is maybe a human being who lost the original consciousness and then gained something else because of a connection. Now, I've got varying memories of past lifetimes, but there was an intervention in my life that changed me completely. So I had contact with Loban, which is the name of my system, Lobon Pai, and this was a drop-in of consciousness. So it changed me completely. So I virtually just kicked out the small little redneck that was inside and started to reformulate a gamut of different areas of awareness that grew on their own accord without my control. So what it's done really is turn off my internal dialogue, switched on an open-hearted feeling to its maximum, and I don't have an internal dialogue. I have an uprising of communication, which I listen to as I'm speaking. So I'm examining the circumstances by listening to myself and learning from this in consequence to what's being heard by myself. Yeah, I hope that's clear. It's kind of weird.
A different way of operating. It's a
Yeah.
completely operating system. So is that what a pure intuitive empath is?
Yeah. If you want to look at empathic communion, it's basically whatever you feel becomes my voice, whatever you realize becomes my realization. But there's a 50% equation embedded within that. So it requires the honesty and the openness of the person who has sent the inquiry, and it requires the honest and open perspective of the teacher, knowing that they're talking on or verbalizing on the behalf of somebody else. So it comes into my chest, and then any questions that are usually brought to me are brought to me in my intuitive capacity to actually answer them before they're asked. So it's so you're basically to give a kind of a viewpoint for somebody else. Just say that you're having these wild feelings and these imaginations that you've got your friend in your chest, or you've got your friend in your head, and you're talking to yourself about, then you can be sure that they've got their awareness on you. So this is the first practice ground to realize that somebody else's momentum or their life purpose or their focus becomes your life purpose and your focus. But in the beginning, this leaves you a little bit disconnected from what you would think was reality, because you're trying to communicate with a person who's already communicating with you. So you're asking yourself, why am I having these in the beginning it'll be thought forms or just these realizations that come up, and you end up ringing the person and they've got something that they need to talk to you about.
Wow, I mean, that brings a whole new level to relationship. It's so beautiful to be that present, to be that able to listen, which means, I mean, one has to be emptied of all the interference, all the garbage, all the noise in order to even be able to pick any of that up. What was your process in terms of that emptying?
Okay, there's a big danger because I was in a friend's house. I've known him for years, and he realized that any thought forms he would have in terms of pick up the plate, put it in the dishwasher, and he was doing this for about 10 minutes, and I realized, what am I doing? So I asked him, what are you doing? He said, I'm testing you. And I said, please don't do that, because I end up acting on your behalf, and it's kind of like a violation, because it's a secret thing he could do, and it's something that I had to pick up on. Now, it's the same with everybody's awareness. You could say, well, there's a certain way of communication where somebody will make a suggestion. That suggestion will go into a person's awareness, and if they really want to please and be accommodating, they'll end up fulfilling that suggestion without consciously agreeing with it, because they just want to be a menial and just basically be there for the person. And then later on, then the questions arise: how can I negotiate what I've just got myself into? You know, so, and then that then true open communication has to happen beyond that point. And I think that's where, when somebody gets a grasp on something, and then the other person would say, well, let's let go of this a little bit and renegotiate. And that's where the true communication has to come in. We've all got to be very, very honest with each other in terms of our intentions. I don't really myself set intentions. I say, I've got an ulterior motive. This is what I want. This is what I'm going to do. I'm honestly putting it on the table. If you don't agree, then it's really, really fine. But I prefer that agreement is made in the beginning, and then we can travel openly and honestly, and only navigate what becomes difficult if it becomes difficult. And it really shouldn't, really. We should be there for each other in a way which says, okay, we'll get through this bump. It's okay, and move forward.
And how many, I mean, when you this kind of network of relationships that you're able to pick up on, how vast is that? And does it not crowd your own space? Does it not bring its own kind of noise into your space? Like,
Very true. I'm moving to Thailand, and I'm partially aware of what everyone's doing in Thailand. And they've even one person called Simba. He said he's seen me from behind walking away. And I've been in Thailand. I've seen the property we're going to, and I'm navigating it. My feelings are fully there. So everything that happens there is fully operational in my feeling center. So if I have any queries or any questions, I'll ask, is this happening? And then they'll say yes. You know. So and if it doesn't happen, then you're humbled, and that's just the way it is. But you've got to voice what you become aware of, and then navigate that with absolute honesty.
would you say that being a pure intuitive empath is actually our natural state without all the interferences, all the nefarious influences, if you want to call them that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at your original feelings, you've got just say your original feelings is what you've been born into the world with. And you know your daughter, you look at your daughter, she's got this beautiful, pure expression, and we did too when we were younger. Now, this pure, beautiful expression is our original personality. So this makes me very difficult for the Vedas, for karmic results, and did you make a choice to come here and everything like that. I put it into very, very simple categories, like your original personality, and then formulated karma, which you have to deal with, which is not to do with your original personality. And will your original personality be destroyed by the prearranged karma of your environment?
And then you have to deal with getting back to your innocent original self with while you're needing to even just figure out how to cope with this karma and what it is to begin with. And that gets us ensnared.
Well, you look at it from a basically look at it from a householder's perspective, in terms of a woman. They're very, very intuitive. Anybody that comes into their environment, they'll be aware of something, and then they'll challenge the person that's coming into the environment and say, what am I feeling? What's going on here? And start to navigate what you need to change before it's even spoken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Right.
and when we do this, what we're doing is saying, well, there's a prearranged element which doesn't really fit with my feeling center. I need to navigate this because it's not cool. It doesn't feel right. And you're coming into my environment, like your home. You've got it all neat and tidy, and then somebody comes into your neat and tidy environment, and that's what makes women so aware, is because everything's ordered. So if everything's ordered, you've got nothing in the background. So everything that comes in front of you, everything that you've placed in your environment is very clear, very clean, and then you become very clear and clean. So if somebody brings something in that's not clear or clean, their own household will be revealed to you because your household is clearer.
That makes so much sense. Okay. And that's why functional order is a natural expression of life.
That's it. That's it.
Wow.
So if you get your ducks in a row, or make your sock drawer tidy.
And then you can pick up on so much more. It's that funny.
Yeah.
So I think about that. Like, I feel like I'm so much more free in my life to be wild because I have so much order in my life. And you know, this idea that, oh, well, you know, if you care about order, you're not carefree. That's not the case. Like, you have so
No.
much space to be carefree if things are. That's I'm glad you pointed that out. So this viral Trojan horse, the way you describe it, I found that so compelling. That this is a quote from your book: "Programming is a viral Trojan horse corrupted and created by social engineering." This idea that that something could be it connects, of course, to the internal dialogue and biases and all this noise that we have inside of ourselves. We think it's our true self, but it's just the biases. And you also call this a form of possession when the internal dialogue is in command. So it's like this viral Trojan horse, the programming, the social engineering, the internal dialogue bias, possession. It all seems to be like this network that is connected. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, well, a Trojan horse maybe. Look, when you're born, you're born with a pure sense of your environment. If everybody goes back to their childhood, they won't think about what's happening. They won't usually don't. If you do say something, it's very pure and very to the point, because that's all you've got. You've got the reflection of what's impinging inside of your body, and you give voice to it. So you don't really have an internal dialogue at that particular point, because you're using your personal heart space to reveal what is manifesting, and you manifest the feeling with the communication, and then you're taught to be punished for that, and then the pure expression becomes, oh, I better second guess myself. And then you start talking to yourself. So then it slowly buries your true voice by second guessing yourself, and through that disempowerment. Now, where a Trojan horse is basically what is put inside of me that makes me feel that I need to go down a path that won't resolve a circumstance, because resolving circumstances mean they're clear and clean. If there's no resolve and perpetual interference in terms of pre-programming is there, you've got a constant feeling that you need, that you can't resolve, you can't get to, and then it puts you in the position to accept that. And as we accept that pre-programming is easy for our governments to push us into areas, like they make promises, and those promises aren't fulfilled, and then we say, well, what are we going to get out of this? You know, and then there's a form of disappointment, and then that disappointment is basically what's running on, and then you've got an alternate feeling or alternate thought forms that you can't give to the person you need to, because they're not available. So even though we say we have a voice in terms of voting, our voice is lost once we vote. Yeah, unless the person's got a lot of integrity and says, well, I'm gonna do the best I can to lift everybody out of emotional and mental and physical impoverishment, so we can go higher into our new evolutionary process.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that requires a whole process, though, of removing these biases and the judgments. I was blown away by how light I felt myself become when I stopped judging based on my biases and just witnessed and observed. It's
Yeah.
the most wild sense of releasing, of becoming lighter, just to release those judgments that were
Yeah.
otherwise just running constantly.
Yeah. If you look at from the power of emptiness, or from Which Wings the Dragon right up to Power of Emptiness, so there's three books explaining being, knowing, and then not doing. So what we're doing there is you notice something that like if you're a hunter, you go into a situation and there's a venomous snake. You'll say, well, I understand from a historical perspective, I've been taught that that snake is dangerous, so I'll keep my distance from it. So you, when you see it, you don't get offended. You don't have a bias. You say, well, that's something I need to avoid. So if I would judge the snake and become obsessed with the snake, and the snake hasn't even bit you, that's exactly the same as if it wouldn't happen that way. But in real life, we say, okay, I've got a realization, I've got an experience that shows me that something's in front of me. Can I let it go? So that I know what's in front of me, yet not hold a judgment in terms of what I've realized. And it's you've got to pull a certain amount of your realization away from the circumstance to give the person the opportunity not to be what you expect. And we expect ourselves to do that for ourselves as well, is to go beyond what we expect of ourselves and give ourselves enough room not to be that expectation, and to travel that very, very fine awareness that we're walking upon. So we're walking on very thin ice.
And how does that connect with how would you describe a path with heart, living with heart in that the way you do?
Okay. Well, you navigate everything that you need to navigate with the people you're with. So if you've got a particular question and the question is viable, and you feel that there's something not quite right, that you talk to it and they bring it to the surface and they navigate every ounce of the communication, as long as there's total honesty, and there's no upheavals, then it's easy. And if there are upheavals, then there's a repetition of dominance, because you don't want to let go of what you feel familiar with, because it's scary to let go of what you feel familiar with. So then we have to be compassionate enough to allow the person to understand where they're going to land, and it's not going to be damaging to them. So you've got to give people a little bit of room to feel safe so they can change.
And then we can relinquish the control that we would otherwise feel because we would otherwise need to be in that dominating role to control circumstances. Also very liberating to not need that. But yet we've been so trained to feel we that our own protection, our own survival, like is rests on whether or not we can dominate the situation.
Let's look at it one way. Just say we're homeless. We don't have a home, and that's our weakness. So the better part of yourself can't come to the surface. So when somebody sees, okay, you need this, and we know that if you don't have this, you don't have a form of expression, because you're left in a vulnerable position. So that's your weakness, and that's a very, very fundamental weakness for everybody. So you and it seems like everybody's strength, because they're not aware that it could be taken away from us, and that draws us into a sense of not entitlement. We all need to be sheltered. But we have that expectation. Now, that weakness is, say, well, your weakness is that you need to be sheltered, so let's shelter you. And then your weakness becomes your strength, but you watch the strengths which manifest from that security, and then you can navigate who you really are once you get what you really need. Because when people are vulnerable, they'll be more agreeable. When they get stronger, their weaknesses can become a monster, or their weakness can become their gratitude. And thank you for being there for me, because it's my weakness. Or just say someone gets angry. Just that one. And you say, well, that is your weakness. I won't stir that anger up, but let's negotiate and talk about why getting angry, so we can stop the trigger for the anger to occur, and let that person feel safe that they can have expression, so it doesn't go into the liver process of becoming unbearable to themselves and to everybody else.
Wow, and so if we were really living as one, as if we were truly interconnected, we would do that because there would be no point in there would be we would want to heal the other as if it was a member of our own body.
That's
So
right.
tribally, this is what they would do. They wouldn't cast people out, right? And if they misbehave, they would heal them. They would work with them.
That's right. We're only just leaving the chimpanzee tribe and starting to realize we should be more humane. And I don't know whether you know how violent chimpanzees are, but they seem everyone is doted on their intelligence, but they're extremely dangerous, because the lower form of their dominance, when they grow to a certain stage, it has to be taken away from a human being, a chimpanzee, when they get to a certain age, because they'll tell your arms out from the sockets. So it's just to get a superior position. So we've got to learn not to fight for the superior position, but to see that everybody's got a quality that is divine, and that is it's a divine intervention, actually. I just had a Freudian slip there. But so everybody has a right to to be exactly who they're really meant to be, and that's exactly what they're meant to do, and that's their purpose as a human being. And in our modern society, we've kind of asking ourselves, what are we meant to do? What are we doing here? Because people have lost their original personality and their purpose. And even if you're a street sweeper, as long as you've got your purpose and you have your voice, that's all that really matters. And then you navigate from that position to find your true self.
So a path of heart, a path with heart is the communion, the communication, the mutual respect, the care, the presence. It's like it's one, like we are one heart in a way.
There was an experience I had. I think I was around about 21, 22, and I went to a naturopath, and she was doing a live blood analysis, and she had a bit of a strong character, so I felt straight away a little bit threatened. And she took a drop of my blood, put it underneath the glass, and looked into the microscope. It was very, very still on the screen, but as soon as she looked at it, my blood ran like little animals away from her gaze. So, and this is a very, very unusual situation. I've never heard of this ever happening to anybody else. But everybody knows when somebody comes into the room, you've got this shift in your body, and you're examining this shift, and the shift coexists with your heart awareness trying to find a connection, and then your blood panicking to find a pure understanding with that person. So your heart's going boom, 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 and it's been scientifically proven that we look for that connection because that means we're safe to communicate, and we're safe on the level of our feeling and our true intelligence. Even though there's maybe only 46,000, no, 146,000 neurotransmitters in the heart, it's very, very intelligent. Yeah, because you're using your eyes, you're using your vocal cords, you're using your listening power to navigate your feeling, and that navigated feeling goes straight into the chest of somebody else you're navigating. So then there's a pure loop of communication, and then you find out who you are, what you need to negotiate, and what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses. So your weaknesses should be cherished. They should never be used against you, because your weaknesses are your strengths, actually, because they're your vulnerabilities. Take away the vulnerabilities of somebody by giving them the power to negotiate those vulnerabilities and never use them against them. You'll find you've got a beautiful ally. But if those, because of the nature of human beings, your vulnerability, and if somebody presses on it, you may react in the wrong way, and then your vulnerabilities become tyrannical, because you are not being heard and you're not being seen. And we've all been pushed into this very, very strange closed loop corner, that we think it's okay to do this to everybody, and their fear mechanisms have got to stop, because how can we evolve if we're totally in fear all the time?
This is the pivot point. I mean, this is
Yeah.
where we need to get back to this in order to make any progress. And so true shamanism then is, I mean, you describe it as the altering of one's perception toward the ultimate truth, a path with heart. It isn't necessarily, it's not shape shifting, doing all these crazy things that you often hear about shamans doing. It's
Yeah.
specifically
Well,
this you describe.
let's give it a nicer name, changeling. So just say that I put my wife on the altar of my perception because I love her dearly. I would never say a word or have a thought which would oppose her being in any way whatsoever, because if I do that, I virtually implode and destroy myself, because she's the most important person in the world to me. So I put her on the altar of my perception. So I'm not only married to her, but I'm married to every single individual that comes into my environment because of that, because of my pure intention and her pure intention towards me. Anything other than that will alert me to communication has to bear relevance at that particular point, because I've got the most beautiful person on the altar of my perception that has never had an ill word for anybody. In the 35 years that I've known her, very, very balanced. She's my Buddha. She's the reason I am the man I am. If it wasn't for her, then my stability would be questionable, I'd say. I want to be completely honest, because without her, and without her on the altar of my perception, and the whole safety behind that and the union behind that is exactly what I was looking for when I came into this world. And it took me a long time to find it, but when I did, it took me a long time to realize, my God, there she is, and then it grew from that particular point, because I knew it was right.
That's our beautiful mitzvah.
Yeah, that's how beautiful, Mr. That's it.
Wow, gosh, that's wow. So Can we then leap into, because I really want to talk about this too, because it's so fascinating, the ubiquitous factor of dark matter and how, just like what that is and how we have misinterpreted what we see and what truly is the real substance of life and everything. Would you be happy to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at something that's you're describing Shiva. She is the emptiness within creation, because behind creation there's more emptiness behind our reality than reality itself. So the manifestation of our universe is a collective edifice that we're all concentrating on. Because if I show you this, everybody will see this. But if you don't see this, does it really exist? These games we play with perception, and I know that collectively we've formulated a reality which suits where we are. But we need to change where we are because it's imploding, because we're not really understanding or being not harmonizing with the universe at large. Because there's no real dangers. It's a matter of just seeing where we can and where we can't be, and we've put ourselves in the circumstance where we can be, where we shouldn't be, and where we shouldn't be is now having a result on our collective awareness, and we're all shifting and saying, well, there needs to be a solution to this, and that solution has to be a collectively aligned, like the 100 monkey syndrome. So if I do, like if somebody does something in Thailand, and then I ring them up and say, well, this is going on, it's only because I'm connected to them. So we can all be connected and realize that the change needs to be made. Then the problem is with the empty space that transforms to our commands, because our awareness is a command. And one thing I can say to everybody is, when you stand up, are you traveling towards the ceiling, or is the ceiling traveling towards you? When I move backwards, is the wall moving towards me, or am I moving towards the wall? Now, if I'd say from an internal perspective, I believe that the ceiling's moving towards me, so I break into my reality and make it more fluid by not agreeing with the agreements. And when I teach people, I can show them how to make the wall oscillate, and then they have releases of DMT, and then the world is not as solid as what we believe. But the solidity of our reality, in terms of our emotional capacity to understand, has to be released. So we got an interior and exterior reality. Yeah, our interior reality is the formulation of our pure self, and our pure self is, we basically know who it is, because that's the person who speaks on our behalf when we feel uncomfortable. We want to be freed from something we shouldn't be entrapped in. That's our interior. Now, and when we look at our interior, how do we get to our exterior phenomena, and how do we free ourselves? Because even if I look at this room, my interior is connected to the exterior. So then going into the non-local awareness is to spread our non-locality from our local space. And non-locality is meant to free us from the karmic residue, or the pre-arranged karmic residue that we're blocked into. And then to when we die, then the reality of our body is taken to the ground. And unfortunately, we take some of those feelings with us that aren't resolved. Yeah. So if you could imagine that the world is composed of a reality that will set the stage for you to realize what you buried. So you go through a holographic, say this is a doorway. You go through a holographic doorway, and the holographic doorway will reveal what's not resolved. So then what you didn't face in life will face you 10,000 times stronger, to see whether you've got the courage to stand up for the illusion which you kept held strongly inside of yourself as a bias. And that illusion will test you to see whether you can walk past that. And if you can't walk past it, then the possibility of coming back is quite real. And the choices that you make in Bardo, or in your death, will be that I'm here. I've made choices in my life, but this choice is now challenging me. So this choice, I will look into the four corners of my reality and look for a soft place to put my awareness, which I feel is safe. And that's not safe. That's more dangerous than anything you could ever imagine. It's trying to escape what I didn't face, to go through a porthole back into the world, which gives me the illusion that this is a safe place to go. Now, everyone would say, well, I made a choice. Yes, I made a choice, but it was a choice that I didn't follow my original feelings to face my choices, that I can actually cope with at that particular point, but I have to have enormous amount of strength to cope with the with it with what's coming at me 10,000 times stronger than one single lie. 10,000 times stronger is horrendous for a person because I have to face the truth of that. And while we don't have a physical body to ground us, you can imagine we don't have your physical body to ground you. Just say a woman says, well, she's going to say, well, I feel physically threatened. I'm not grounded, and I'm shifting. All my emotions are shifting because I'm not grounded in safety, and that's what will happen to us. Not grounded in safety, yeah. So we'll be faced with something that is irreversible if you can face it. So that's why it's very, very important for the ultra my perception to communicate with your ultra perception, so that we can dig out all of the what would you call it? What's the best word? I've forgotten the word. It's terrible. I'm getting wiped by myself. PTSD. So we have a certain amount of PTSD for behavioral things which have come towards us, which we deem unfair. So this PTSD is on the ultra perception. You say, well, this is what I don't want. So what? How do I need to behave for it not to happen again? And if it happens again, do I have the courage to tell the person not to do that? Because in a lot of cases, does karma follow you? Or does you resolve not to be karmically entangled to something which is prearranged for you? And when you have that choice, it's very powerful, because we're not put into the position of saying that, okay, you're facing this because it's your karmic lot. And no, it's because you've accepted a false karmic lot. And then we go down avenues of perception which really don't apply to what we're really meant to do. So for me, I'm doing what I'm really meant to do. So I'm very comfortable with that, but it's a lot to navigate. You're doing what you're really meant to do. So it's you're comfortable with navigating that, and anything that's uncomfortable, you'll settle that navigation so that you can continue doing what you feel is what you're meant to do while you're living. Because people don't know what they're meant to do. So what am I meant to do? Be your original self and find out what happens from that. Yeah. Be your pure voice. Am I being terrible?
No, this is so big. What you're talking about
Yeah.
right now is so big. And I would love to just slow it down in one
Yeah.
area specifically, because I think
Okay.
I have a feeling people are going to be very curious about this specifically. I think it's so important because we don't there's no access points for knowledge around specifically this Bardo moment you're talking about, not Bridget Bardo. And this like at in the let's say the
Okay.
transition of death and how to
Yeah.
be prepared for that and how not to get like swept right back
Okay.
into
Yeah.
that tunnel of light that is taking us
Yeah.
back to a
Now,
rebirth. Yeah.
yeah, let's take away all the analogies you just put forward in terms of the reality of what you expect. We're in Bardo right now. We're making choices. Do we have the power to face those choices? Do we have the power to stand up with our righteous voice, which isn't going to hurt anybody? Which and then you take what comes at you with trepidation, quite frankly, sometimes. Oh, this is hard, and then you get through it. You don't look for a way out. Now I'm talking in the same vein now. We don't look for a way out which is easy for us. If you look out for a way out that's easy for you, you'll land in a spot which is not mature enough to handle the next situation. You become deviously inclined that, okay, I can become passively go into this direction and then find out that it's the wrong choice. So then you begin to develop traits which don't belong to you. Yeah. So the life and death is like you, okay, let's look at life and death. You go to bed at night, you go to sleep. And then when you go to sleep, you have this prearranged agreement with your biology to unravel the things you couldn't unravel in life. And you wake up for refreshed because your hormones are strong, you got a good sleep and everything like that. But if you're a person like me that doesn't have thought forms and don't dream, then I know the consequences of not resolving a circumstance in the moment that's been assigned to you, which has been assigned to everybody in the circumstance. And I go to bed and I have to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to process the feelings which I'm not going to dream with. So I see these feelings inside of myself and I'm like, oh gosh. Now, if I was dreaming, I wouldn't be aware of what I'm processing. So then I'm then if this processing principle. Now, you must have had some stage, or everybody that's listening, at some stage where they wake up in the middle of the night and they say, well, I can't sleep because I haven't settled something. And it's possessing me. And then you say, well, I've got to get to the bottom of this. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, you want to get up and talk to the person that you need to get to the bottom of with, but you know you can't because it's socially unacceptable to ring them up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So get up, let's talk about this because this is the right time to do this. But you have realizations. And those realizations are extremely subtle in those early hours of the morning. Everybody's going, oh yeah, I've woke up in the morning, I've had a realization, I've got to remember this. You get up and you've forgotten what you realize, but your body's knows how to understand such deep things, but when your conscious mind wakes up, it's kind of like restricted because it's not located in your heart awareness. So you don't have you've forgotten what you navigated, and you how can I express this truth? And then it's out of your hands. So if it's out of your hands, you have to have trust us to say, well, I knew the answer when I was in this subtle state, so let me proceed. With the utmost care to see whether that subtly comes out during the communication. And you quite frankly won't know, but you'll see there'll be a difference made because you care about your pursuits and you care about the results of your pursuits. If you don't care, then there's something a little bit wrong there. You've got to
So,
care about everything.
wow, there's so many things here. If we resolve our assignment in the waking state, then we'll have fewer dreams, and dreams are a way of enabling us to resolve things that we're not able to resolve yet in the waking state. Sort
Yeah, now
of.
this is a tough, very, very tough question. Now, if I have a pure need to resolve something or a pure need to do something, and then all of a sudden all these people pop up and resolve the circumstance through the kindness. So then when that occurs, those people are put on the altar of perception in terms of why did they do this? Why are they there? And how come it's happening? It's divine intervention. And then you've got the other experience where there's no divine intervention because somebody's giving you a roadblock. But that roadblock is to show you that person's not really necessarily meant to be there. How do you get around that roadblock? And then you're communicating, you're not communicating well enough to dissolve the roadblock to get a communal understanding so that you can have a mutual agreement, which is a subtle compromises. But those compromises have to be surrounded by an enormous amount of truth and subtlety.
Does it have to do with the courage of your intention to resolve it at all? Like if it's unresolvable, but you make the effort to resolve it from your pure heart, does that because you can't control the other person,
That's
obviously.
right. That's right. So then you've got a very, very subtle choice. Now, through association and repetitive association, you know that you'll have a binding with somebody. So you've got to be careful that that binding doesn't become permanent because it'll be a permanent fixture of your emotional stability. Yeah, because you'll have this recognition that it's not okay, but you're making it okay by going along with it. So you get to a certain point where you say, well, this is done. We're finished with this. I've got to move on. And then maybe the person will chase you for 10, 20 years or even or less or more, I don't know. Most people have this experience because they can't let go of what they're attached to because their attachment to you keeps their drama alive. So it's very difficult for them to let go of you. So in my first book, I wrote about character assassination and a murder of crows because one particular incident can turn into so many different variables that you get captured in if you don't deal with it immediately.
Wow. So we really have to learn to speak up for what our heart is saying and to listen when others speak up and not be the tyrant who shuts others' voices down.
So it's a very delicate path that we're all endeavoring to walk upon, and you've always got to be prepared for circumstances not to be successful, and if that's the case, you just wait patiently, and you just do what you've got to do. And you just move away without causing harm.
But in the Bardo, ex let's say the, because we're in Bardo now, but then this, it when we transition, let's say, we're going to be tested. We have to be prepared. Is it kind of like lucid dreaming in the sense that if you train it in your waking, if you train it enough, that you'll know that when you're in that situation and you don't want to come back to this dimension, but you want to move on, you handle it, you know what's going to come for you. You look at it head on and you deal with it and you can move forward.
Yeah, and you try and do that as gracefully as possible. But the one example I can give is when you go to bed, you put your head down, and your intentionality will go to maybe what's not resolved. Your eyes will always look at what hasn't been dealt with, and this is a normal function of the eyes. So you close your eyes, you look at that particular situation. You know that you want to go there, but there'll be a section of going to sleep where you won't be aware of what's going on at all. So in that particular instance, you've got a life situation that empties itself of all content, and then you've got content being reorganized by the fact that you go into a state that wakes you, puts you deeper, and then wakes you a little bit, and then puts you deeper, but you haven't completely woken up, and then you wake up. So what do we forget? Is the transition from our eyes going to the details of what needs to be resolved, and then emptiness. And then we go into resolving that through the mechanism of dreaming to resolve those particular feelings, and then we wake up. But before we wake up, we go into another transitional phase of emptiness. So what we're learning from that is we're living and dying in a very, very strange way while we're here. So if we go into Bardo with a feeling of being released, but as we're released, we're not grounded, and then anything that faces us will cause us turmoil, and we'll be looking for that empty space. And that empty space is, we make the wrong choice. We go into the gastric fluids of our mother's body, and then we forget everything that ever happened. And then we get reborn again. So everything's there right in front of us, but can we notice it? But we can't notice that we've forgotten, and we can't notice that when we're forgotten, when we're born, we didn't know that we didn't have that particular memory. And then more memories start to reemerge, so it starts again.
Is this something that you work with your students on, this particular practice?
Yeah, basically, just talking about what arises, so you end up empty of any intentions. If you look at any of my interviews, a lot of the guys in the interviews will say they get wiped, and they get wiped, so they don't know what they're saying, they don't know what they're feeling, but they're renewed at that particular point. But everybody says, "I'm wiped. I've lost my capacity to communicate." So they made a transition into a state of consciousness which empties them of themselves, but they're fully awake and fully engaged in not being totally connected to anything, so they're free at that particular point. But they're saying, "Well, I've been wiped," and it happens to me too. And I said, "Guys, I just got wiped by my own attention." I sometimes disappear in the room while I'm teaching, and I don't know what I've done. And I go, "Guys, can you? Was that okay?" And everyone says it's okay. But I was wiped at that particular point to make me realize that my attachments really can be detached. But do I have the courage to be so detached that I've got no reference point? And we all know that we're attached to our reference points, including myself. So then the biggest test is, how can I get out of my local awareness to non-local attention or universal consciousness, which only bears relevance to what's harmony and what's non-harmonious, which is usually immature attention doesn't realize that this is where we can't go, so we harmonize. And then we can start traveling transdimensionally, and all sorts of weird things will start happening.
And that state it's so alive when you feel like if I'm understanding the wiped idea, it's this is such an it's so it's almost like there's all the potential, because there's all the aliveness, but you haven't hooked into anything yet. Is that also, it really what you're describing feels to me to be the essence of humility. And that getting to that impersonal state that's not cold. And when you say impersonal, people think it's like that means cold, but it's actually that being that feeling the presence of the all that is, as opposed to having to place a bias on it or it coming from a subjective place.
Now, just say I go completely empty, and then I'm in that position. So once I become empty, I can receive you completely without any bias. So it's a so so it is possible to be wiped and then receive a person completely, because when my students get wiped, all they're doing is getting ready to receive. But everything's been dropped that they want to, because I'm doing an interview with them. So they have to have continuity of the communication. And when they get wiped, it's basically they're dropping into my state. and then the only thing that really matters is what arises inside of them in terms of their pure intelligence coming to the surface. Yeah. And that's empathic, being empathically inclined.
Which is the goal, is to get back there. And so if we endeavor to succeed at getting back to that pure empathic state, where, like, then we're okay. Maybe the question I want to get a little bit further out in terms of, not that we're not far out already, we're pretty far out, but in terms of like the orchestration of this reality. So if we get that we're meant to be doing this and repairing ourselves so that we can be the channels, the conduits of life as we're intended to be, what is that bigger picture? What is who put us here to do that?
Well, there's a beautiful being out there that I've probably spotted about five times, and it's a universal, very, very loving being. You know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can test it. You say, you're at 3 o'clock, you just imagine that you're in the stars, and you say, please enter me, please communicate. It's very simple. But to go back to the other side, and this very, very beautiful being. It's very, very safe, very, very nurturing. But when you look at like saying being, I want to go back to being white. Now I said we go to bed, our eyes go to what's relevant, and then we slip into a non-conscious state, so we get wiped. And in that non-conscious state, then the next stage comes in for communication. Now if I'm wiped and you're part and parcel of my dream, so I'm wiped, so my dream then talks to me. And then we start to resolve what's in between us. So we are in a waking dream, and we are in a very, very complex universe in terms of communication. So if I get wiped, then I receive you completely. And then when you're listening to me, you may have inspiration coming up in your chest. So when you have that inspiration, you can stop me and ask the question, because that inspiration is your point of reference to speak of what you realize without it being formulated completely. And as you're listening to yourself formulating your inspiration in terms of what's just happened, you may go back to some familiar elements, but it may find something new inside of yourself to express, because the room for that expression has been made by saying, going, ah, I've just realized something. And then it's got to do with the content of feeling that's renews itself in terms of how you can be excited about, this is truly my path, this is truly my realization.
Does that equate with the I am presence? Is that what we're entering us? Maybe
No.
I'm a little confused with this because
Okay.
because I'm thinking about this benevolent being, and that I was thinking that was maybe the essence of what created this reality. But is that, I don't know if that's what you're saying.
That which is not, that which is everything that we see. That which is not, which is the name of Shiva, you could say. This is a Hindu perspective, but the thing is that which is not, we're watching that which is, and we've forgotten what's not. So that which is not is the empty feminine creativity within our body that silently watches and then responds to the circumstance because of its sensitivity.
Is
And
that
that,
why?
but.
I'm sorry,
And
go ahead.
that belongs to men and women. So then there's no differentiation between male and female, as long as you can get into this neutral state of realization, because then your voice will practice this very, very soft process. And we know if this soft process isn't governed by truth, it becomes malaligned, and then becomes resentful. So everybody has a woman. I want to use a term, but it's not fair on women. But a woman's scorn. What about a man's scorn? It's like a scorn comes up because that which is not hasn't been allowed to have expression for its for the true momentum of the circumstance to get to where it really meant to be. So then we go back to renegotiate what was really meant to be, once the scorn is finished, or once the disruption is finished. I hope I'm making sense. You look like what is he saying?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not sure I'm following, but I think maybe it's because of my own expectations of wanting to hear the answer of like, here's a better way to, here's clarity on reality, and looking for the answer, like, here's where we're here, as opposed to there isn't a creator, we're in the creation. But
Yeah, well, just say it from your own perspective. If you say that which is not, as you're listening, you're in a space of reception, so you're receiving. So you're still that, and you're that which is not, all the time. So there's a portion of you that's totally switched on, but it's switched on in a way that it doesn't interfere with the process of your awareness. But the process of your awareness is connected to the inspirational point of realization. Oh
okay.
God, I'm being terrible, aren't I? Too
No,
complex.
I'm wondering if you're trying to shift me out of out of my own matrix of like thinking about these things. It is kind of weird to think that our minds are so conditioned around things that we can't hear that which is being that's which being told from a higher place because of all
Yeah.
those layers of interference. Like,
Now you.
am I not receiving something now because I have so much interference?
No, you're just very interested, and that's the testing ground for my integrity for what you just did, because you just gave me a vehicle into something which I could do, which is inappropriate by saying that you don't understand, you're this and you're that, but you're very present. So it's a all we're talking about is the part of you that realizes, and the part of you which inside of you which speaks to your realization, because that which is not is fully inside of your body in terms of its capacity to listen. And yes, you're right. Maybe a bias would come up to represent itself via a frame of reference, but that frame of reference is actually inside of you. That frame of reference is viable, but it's not there simultaneously, so it bumps into the bias, and then the bias is tested. So it's just being equated with your stillness. So your stillness, just say your stillness will watch your child, but that doesn't mean you're disengaged and you're not fully you're watching the situational awareness of your child with a form of an attunement, which you don't want to put a bias on your child, because you just want to watch them unbiasedly, so you don't want to interfere with them, because the level of your heart will recognize that, you know. So, and then it becomes a recreation of yourself. Oh, how do I explain this now? So if I become the alternate version of somebody else, just say this. So I've got a very strong father that was too mean. So he's given me a message that I want you to become the alternate version of what I've done. So you become an emotional firecracker, and you become a something that you create, but it's because of my input. So he's very pleased with that. So I say I don't want to be involved in that, because I know who I originally am, and I'm not going to be reset. So because I don't want to reset, I understand my original personality, which is just sitting quietly. It doesn't have an opinion, but it reveals everything that comes into its emptiness, and then that builds a bias beyond that point, because in the beginning we're open, we question, but when we question, we get maybe punished into a position that isn't. I don't really like those questions, because maybe when you're 10 or 15 or 25, you'll ask those questions, and I don't want to answer them. So then they squish very quickly. So the silence of a young child is very, very pure. So, and the child will always ask the question, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? And that we're all doing this. So it doesn't mean you're limited or I'm limited. It's just we basically ask the fundamental question, what is the truth? And then you examine your own framework, and then that truth is tested through time and through effort. Now, the only thing that would be viable between you and me as a real experience is that do you feel free? Do you feel understood? And if you have a question, then we'll answer those questions, and vice versa, and everything like this. So it's imperative that we're in the position to ask a question, but we're in the position to actually have a life experience as well, to define that question through even asking it, and the world will give you that answer back very quickly. I don't know whether I've gone off into another tangent for
No,
you there.
I'm hanging on for dear life here, but I'm wondering if it's just because I intellectualize things. I'm learning how to feel as opposed to intellectualizing everything because if all our answers are within, we have to get quiet enough and feel enough and not intellectualize everything to get those answers.
Yeah,
And
but also to be fair to you, maybe I'm giving context without I'm giving answers with not enough context. So I don't want you to put yourself in that position, nor would I put myself into a dominant position so you don't understand. Maybe I haven't given enough context. And the context is usually relayed in experience with people. So if it's not really understood, it becomes very well understood when you get close to somebody. You say, well, I don't really understand the context of this, but I can see how you're behaving. And then the context is taken on in terms of the result of the context between two people. And then you can say, well, that's my experience. Now I'm beginning to understand. And that's how we develop relationships.
That's so true. That really is true. I love how you said power becomes recognizable to itself, because the times and when I feel like I'm in my truth, I'm in my zone, I can feel that aliveness, and it's unquestionable. It's just explains itself, which is part of why I became so passionate about the cleansing life, because when I emptied my body of all the accumulated waste matter, I felt the power, and it was like, oh, this. I remember this when I was 4 years old. I remember this feeling. It was power recognizing itself and being able to get closer to it. And I feel like that's almost like not a mantra, it's the wrong word, but it's an adage or something that really helps to be a litmus test for whether, you're in the zone or not.
This is very good what you just said, because everybody has their qualities, their strengths. You have a quality in strength, I have a quality in strength. You've done enormously amazing things to get rid of the shit out of people. And I do the same thing on exactly the same level. It's just you go it from a way which is, I think, is exciting. It's very, very good, because getting rid of the waste gets rid of the old feelings and everything like that. So it's virtually the same concept, really. So if we have a group of people together, then the quality of the group of people will deter you'll be determined, the group will be determined upon the power of that person, and you follow the power of that person because they uniquely evolved this for themselves to help other people and themselves simultaneously. So, I mean, so that's really what it is. If you can't quite understand what I'm saying, it doesn't really matter. What really matters is who you are and your intention behind who you are, and that's a beautiful quality.
No, I see what I do. I think I understand what you mean there.
Because from an individual perspective, if we've got 10 people, there's one person who has a particular quality. You exploit it because they want it to be exploited, because that's their talent. And that it that that's not really an ex exploitation. It's something which is very, very beautiful, because they know what they can do, and they know what they can do to stop what they're really meant to do, and that stops themselves. So you're doing what you're meant to do, and I'm doing what I'm meant to do, and that fulfills our individual tasks as human beings. And then we look at our own deficits, and that's our job, to go into our own deficits, and then we look at this to clear it and become humbled by the fact that we're not perfect. And we've got stuff to deal with, and we've got stuff to grow through. And
Yeah,
there
sorry, it gets
sorry
me excited because I think it's just so helpful to know what it is you're supposed to be healing. So even if you don't know what your purpose is, anyone who's listening to this, at least you know what you're supposed to be doing with your time and existence. You don't fritter it away in ignorance, because you've just described something that the first half of our conversation was about the path with heart and what that means and how to get into communion. And just to spend however long it takes to do that is successful life lived, right?
That's right. Now, you and I understand ourselves very, very clearly, because the energy going between us is so palpable. When I listen to you, it's so enjoyable, because your passion is there. So then we really understand ourselves on this level of perception. And now everybody can just rewind what you just did. It was so beautiful. It was so pure. It came across as your purpose, and that's purely you. So I'm seeing you, and that's your strength. And in encompassing those strengths are all the experiences that brought that strength to the surface to want to save people from circumstances which you've been through. I'm exactly the same. So when I'm looking at that, I understand you completely. I see you completely. So I'm traveling on those vibratory communications, not projections. So I actually see who you are. So what I do with who you are defines who I am for you. And this is what's happening with everybody. So that is fulfilling for me. So even if you say I don't really understand what you're saying, Luhan, that's really not the point. The point is that who you really are in terms of what I can see, in terms of your projection towards me, and that makes me feel really safe. And it doesn't matter whether you understand me and I don't want to be dominant. What's most important is what we're giving to each other back and forwards in terms of a pure intention. Yeah.
Yeah, and we can have this with 8 billion people
Yeah.
if everyone would just appreciate it. And then we actually get to see the beauty in everyone because we're seeing the real them, which is always going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
It couldn't be anything but because it's truth and it's coming from that childlike place of innocence and vulnerability and enthusiasm and creativity, just that excitement, that aliveness.
Yeah. And this is the what you've done with the Enlightener is basically the truth of changing people's lives. And I'm endeavoring to do exactly the same with my method. So we're exactly the same. And the mutual understanding is it even like, I mean, I guess I don't want to reinforce this over and over again, but you understand me very, very deeply because I can see there's a continual flow, even if you say, well, you don't really understand my words completely. But my intention is to communicate as purely as possible. And I'm sorry if it's complex, but the complexity is part of my character. So that complexity, and I see the complexity of your character in terms of your vibration of being sent. And then I navigate that. And how does that change my awareness? Because even if we can't find that pure understanding between each other, we have a pure understanding between each other.
Trust.
Yeah. And this is a very, very beautiful thing. So we can reiterate, and then when I start using the lighter enlightenment when I go to Thailand, I'll say, well, I'm not so complicated anymore. I'm very simple because shit's just been dealt with.
It's gonna be a shit show for sure. Wow, gosh. So there's a question I really want to ask, even though it seemed very mundane and very like intellectualizing things, but I still have to ask. So I want to hear your definition of enlightenment.
Oh. Enlightenment is to endeavor to understand all your faults and to embrace everybody else's brilliance.
It's beautiful. That is so beautiful. Wow. Okay, we're gonna put a big fat quote up about that. That's really cool. Wow. And is it too much to get into? Oh, I see. We're actually have we really been on? Oh, gosh, we're going over time here. I didn't realize that.
I don't
Okay.
mind.
Okay. I was
It's okay. Yeah.
gonna ask you, I want to ask you about the gates, but I don't know if that's a big topic. So maybe we should save that for round two, but it just seems like that's fascinating as well.
With the gates, can you
The
reiterate a little bit
gates,
more?
yeah, like the seven gates and how we get past, like we have to learn how to listen with wait the 100% of the ears and the eye, the looking
Okay.
inward and the looking outward, and that's like the first gate
Okay.
of these
Okay.
multiple
Okay.
gates.
Now that's the most important gate because okay, if you've got an internal dialogue, then the internal dialogue means that your ears are refocused internally. So that internal dialogue, if you listen to that, then your ears aren't purely where they're meant to be. Your ears are meant to be 100% listening to your environment without an internal voice to reroute it back in. So once you've got that established, you're purely listening. So then you look at the world and you only see 2% of the world really. Because everything is relayed internally, so I watch the world very, very gently, and it has a tremendous effect on the internal process because the internal process is where the external world makes its manifest really. It's just the eyes are perusing everything. Now, the feelings of what you touch are internalized as well. So it's called Ting Jing or your listening power. Now, with your listening power, if I would say. That's the first gate. The very, very most the most crucial gate is to come to terms with your listening, your looking, and your feeling centers. Your looking goes externally, but your looking power is basically internally. You're listening externally, but you're not internally involved, so you're purely in your heart. So when then you peruse your body. Now, if I go into my body and I say, well, I'm purely listening externally. Now, if I go to my skin and say my skin is my second gate, then how do I get to my skin without saying skin? Now, we do this with each other. We've got a relationship with each other, and somebody touches me, I'm purely in my skin because of the sensation of that quality. So that quality is inside of us. So we all know that when somebody touches this first quality, we interpret it every single micro gesture within that touch. Every single micro gesture. So when we do that, then the interpretation is that now my listening power goes to what's becoming unified with the touch. Now that touch can be a look of my eyes. So I'm now gone beyond my skin into a deeper reservoir, gone into my heart. So we travel through these gates in a very, very gentle way. And and when I'm talking to you, you're looking at me 2%, but inside of you, what's happening inside of you? If it doesn't manifest now, it will manifest later on. So then you begin to look at this, but you don't assign words to it, but the feelings get assigned to words. So then you
All
attempt
the
to,
reading that's happening, all the reading that's happening from within is picking up on things that the eyes are not picking up on. The eyes don't have the capacity to feel and receive what that inner state, that intuition can
Oh
see.
yeah, yes I do. Okay, just imagine that we've got two qualities. We've got photon and we've got plasma. So we're made of plasma, we're made of photons. So that if your eyes there's a cone in the eyes which is on the gray spectrum. Now the gray spectrum cone, if the third eye opens, then you have the capacity to spot the spirit mind or the intention of somebody with the plasmic flare that comes off their body. So the plasmic flare will then touch upon your eyes, which touch upon your feelings. So everything that you've got, my words touch upon you, my gestures touch upon you, our eyes touch upon each other. So we're in a state of communion. So within that state of communion, where are we responsible? Every single thing that we do, we're responsible for. And then we navigate what the irresponsibility or the mistake of perception that comes up. And then we begin to navigate that. And this is how we're meant to be, really, as human beings.
So much going on, and
Yeah.
we're missing it if we're not able to have that communion. If the world's carrying us into the circus, we're missing the most magical part of life, just
Yeah. Yeah.
connecting.
We're being bypassed, but we're being bypassed by elements which are put there to make sure we're bypassed. Like listening to a bird singing is what we're really meant to do to calm down. But if our environment separates us from nature, then nature, our true nature disappears, and then we can be pre-programmed quite easily because it's a constructed reality. Unnatural and construct reality, and that's what we've got to break away from.
Well, and okay, last question on this topic, and I promise we'll wrap up in a moment, but this is big stuff. So, this idea of not, so I've lived most of my life in a hyperattentive state because I've had so much stress and trauma as a child. So to be hyper alert and then to realize that you're missing out on life when you're hyper alert because you're trying to make everything that you see and hear in the tangible, real, biased mind, like you're holding you. People who are in that state hold on so tightly to what they can perceive, because that's what they use to keep themselves safe. And to let go of that when you're so entrained over, for me, nearly 50 years. That's, is there, I mean, practicing doing it, I know most things, I think just doing the training and committing and is the way, but I dream of a day where I could let go of so much of that.
Yeah, and so do I. And so does everybody else. So we're all entrusted with what we're holding on to, and that in and being entrusted with that is a real blessing. Because you just said that I've got trauma. What's my responsibility towards you? Is to not to traumatize, to bring the things up which make you lock up, to make them free so you feel safe, so that you can expand. and everybody should know this, that our expansion as human beings will bring about our brilliance. But the holding patterns of what's happened to us in terms of trauma, they're a sacred thing. It's very, very sacred.
To feel safe enough for your community of loved ones to and for us all to be safe for others, we bring healing just by being safe.
That's right. That's right. So you never lose it. You never use anything against somebody. It's that's not the correct thing to do. The only thing you can do is protect yourself if that position is weaponized because of misunderstanding, and then you've just got to talk to it gently. So we've all got a really big responsibility for each other, because our relationships have a void of real meaning and real understanding because of the way our society has been constructed. And we all need to come together to join in a collective awareness to care and to for loving love everybody the way that they're meant to be loved, so that we can find what we really necessarily need to do. And it may take a few generations, but it's got to start somewhere. And I do believe it's starting now.
No, I can feel it. And understanding it this way and not merely superficially is the turning point. I think it will be for so many people. Luan, you're off to Thailand in a couple of days. You and Mitzvah are going to be relocating, which is so exciting. I know that the audience is going to want to get in touch with you, work with you. What is the best process for that? What do you recommend? Obviously, starting with the books, probably. And I love the fact that they're all on Audible, so one can consume them just by listening, which I find to be a delightful way to receive the knowledge. But if someone wanted to learn really from you directly and to be able to partake in this depth, what do you recommend?
Well, you can go to my website, parallelperception.com, and there'll be a little pop-up that comes on, and you can grab my book for free. And then it puts you on the mailing list, and as soon as I get up and running and the house is built and the training space is built, then I'll be on my way. But I will probably do online in the beginning once I get settled down and get over the jet lag. It's 12 hours different, so 12 o'clock will be like midnight for me. But that is a possibility. And finding me through the website and the funnels that David has created for me is the way to do it. You just connect, go on the mailing list, and as soon as I'm up and running and ready to go, then everybody will be informed.
Fabulous, because I know I want to dig in much more deeply and grasp all the next steps I know lie in store that you hold within you.
There's a I did an online what do you call it, gravity course, which is the first thing I teach. And if anybody, it'll be coming out maybe in 2 weeks, so there'll be a possibility to do an online course with me, which goes for quite a while, and
Okay.
that it gives you an introduction to the system.
That's brilliant. Okay, that's really great to know. All right. Wow. Well, bon voyage
Thank
and
you.
happy setting up a new home in Thailand. It's going to be spectacular. And thank you so much for sharing all that you have today. You'll just feel so grateful personally. And I know everyone listening would have received so much goodness and blessings from you. And just there's so much more to learn. And it makes the journey fun, though, knowing that and knowing where to turn for it.
Thank you so much for having me on, Natalia. I really appreciate it.
Oh, such a joy, Luhan. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks,
Until next
lovely.
time, namaste. Blessings.
Okay.